shoot for the moon and see how high we can get. Because, again, if you look at things that make a difference to the world, none of them were targeting a small little goal. Everyone was targeting something that other people believe wasn't achievable.
Welcome to the Greg Allen Podcast. Thanks for joining us, where we talk about life. I truly believe that everyone has a story to tell and a lesson to teach, and that's what this show is all about. So if you're enjoying the show, please head over and leave us a review. It helps us connect, inspire, and help more people like you. And I just want to do a big shout out to you for taking the time to grow and improve. So good on you. Keep doing what you're doing, and good luck in life.
Hey everyone, we're here with Lee Chambers. Thanks for joining us, Lee. I'm really excited to have you here and to have a big chat about all the things that you're working on at the moment.
Yeah, it's great to be with you today, Greg.
Thanks for your time. So tell us a little bit about how your year's going so far. What have you been up to?
Yeah, it's been a crazy 6 months. We launched it back in December 19. So it's been full on, really, in many ways. We took the first 3 months with a number of clients and we were building that up nicely. And all of a sudden, the COVID hit, and that caused us to change some elements of our delivery. We brought some different things online. We started designing some new programs, and we've got our first international clients, which has certainly been a boon and a boost during these challenging times.
Yeah.
But I've been finishing off my own education, and I've got a young family that I've been spending a lot of time with, homeschooling for the first time, and yeah, it's been interesting.
Awesome, man. That's awesome. So Lee, tell us a little bit about what your business does since you've launched.
Yeah, so Essentialize has two sections, a coaching business and a workplace wellbeing business. So to kind of elaborate on the coaching side, we take individuals through a process where we help them gain real clarity on where they want to go, look at where they're starting today, and actually look at the bigger, longer term goals and why they've got those goals, see if they really aligned to their actual purpose, the missions they want to undertake. And then we take them through a health coaching process where we look at the sleep, the nutrition and the movement and see how can we give them more energy for this journey that they're going to undertake, moving towards their potential. And then we start to look at some of the psychological aspects. So we look at limiting beliefs that might be holding you back, and we start to work on mindset and resilience, start to really get the understanding of how our mind works so we can stop it holding us back and kind of unlock the elements there that we can actually use to help us push ourselves forward. And then we work towards planning and building strategies that embed habits in your life that are positive to keep you moving on the upward spiral every day, and look at ways that you can start to really plan to get towards the best version of you and how you can use that in your life to build better relationships, to be healthier and to be happier. Now, the workplace wellbeing side has really taken off, and that's been really busy. So we do employee wellbeing strategy. We look at ways to bring it in, but also ways to cultivate it internally through the psychology of physical and mental environments, through workplace culture, through conscious leadership, purposeful business. And then once we've got those aligned and a real organic well-being within the company, we then run health awareness events, collect health data and do assessments with employees so that they can become more responsible for their health and well-being. And if they feel appreciated within the business, then they're much more likely to do that. And we look to ensure that they know where to go if they're struggling with the mental health, how to use their employee benefits to the biggest advantage. And the biggest thing that we actually do is run series of workshops that show just how physiologically and psychologically connected we are and how we should look to try and make small, minor improvements across a lot of areas to get a really big benefit to feeling much more energetic, much more healthier, much more happier. And then for the business, that means more motivated, engaged employees who are more creative, more productive, more likely to stay with your business. And your business works to become somewhere where well-being is really a core part of your business planning, your business decisions.
Wow. Yeah, that's powerful. So are you mainly working for businesses and their employees, or do you do it on an individual basis as well?
So it's mainly the workplace well-being. We are working for companies, small to medium-sized companies mainly.
Cool.
Between 50 to 200 employees. And that's somewhere where I've identified I can make a real difference because they're not so highly structured that individual departments are in offices spread around the world and departments are not siloed. And leadership still has a touch point with the very bottom of the organization. So for me, that's where I can bring the biggest influence. And obviously the elements of that then come into my personal coaching program so that individuals can then go through that process. But I have had a company come forward and now I'm actually coaching their individual employees through my system with the intention to then embed that into the workplace wellbeing program going forward.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Congratulations. That sounds like such a needed thing at the moment, especially with everything that's going on. It couldn't have come at a better time, right? It's like COVID's hit and everyone's sort of needing that connection with themselves and connection with their physiological and psychological, like you're talking about. And I think it's, a really good thing that you're doing there. I'd really love to unpack a couple of those things that you said. So if we could dive into some of the personal things that, like when you're working with an individual and you ran through those, you listed them all out, and I think that I'm fascinated by each one of those things. Can we spend a little bit of time on each one of those and really dive into that, maybe for the benefit of the listener so they can sort of look at their own lives and go, well, you know, I can apply this to my own life or this framework and I think and get some benefit out of that?
Certainly, yeah.
Cool. All right. So if we could go back through that list, because it doesn't have to be in exact order, but what you feel maybe is the biggest movers of those things that you said, that can have the greatest difference in someone's life and which will then benefit them at work as well.
Yeah, so the really big one and the first step is to take a step back and look at the goals that you've set for yourself. So many people have goals. There are some people who don't set goals, but as human beings, we are teleological. So we're kind of motivated by targets. If you imagine an archer is without a target to fire his arrow at, he doesn't really know where to fire his arrow.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of understanding that we do actually need targets, but targets are not all we need.
Yeah.
So the first thing that we look at is a lot of people have goals and aspirations. But are those goals and aspirations what you truly want? Or are they what you think that you want? Because again, society puts a lot into us over the years or as we grow up, as we become adults. And it's a lot of our beliefs, the way that we feel, the way that we, you know, see the world through our lens is based on all that information we've taken. When we were born, we didn't have any of that information kind of embedded upon us. And almost the way that I see it is society and the people that you surround yourself with gradually stick stuff onto you over the years as they go by. Your parents are sticking stuff in a backpack on your back that for so many people walks around with them for the whole life. So we really start that initial process. And in a lot of ways, it requires powerful questioning. And what we find is, as we go through life, for education, in work, most of our lives are about finding answers and finding solutions, which is powerful in its own right, except that nowadays, Google will give you the answer for almost anything. What is a real skill that helps people to dig deep inside themselves and start to understand who they are authentically, to get more clarity on what their purpose is to be able to ask themselves those powerful questions inside and actively listen to other people. So we start with that process, you know, what are your goals? People write them out. And then start to ask, why? Why is that your goal? And what have you done in the past? What did you enjoy? And actually, let's go a bit bigger. When you pass one day, what do you want your family to say about your eulogy? What do you want your friends to say? What do you want the person down the street who didn't know you very well, but has taken the time to come and pay the respects? What would you want them to say? And we start to look at things. So you're on your deathbed. What regrets do you have? Can we start to look at those and ensure that you don't have those regrets? So many people regret not being true to themselves, not staying in contact with the people who they cared about, not living the life on their own terms. And again, people tend to regret what they didn't do rather than what they did. And that tends to come through in a big way. So again, we do a range of different exercises, including you're about to be awarded a medal by the Prime Minister. What would it be for? What passionate project could you take forward in your life? We start to look in so many ways. Where were your strengths? What are you really good at? What do you enjoy? Can you use that to bring value to the world? Could that be your mission? So we tend to look at it from a lot of different angles and start to unpack who are you authentically yourself. Remove all society's grime. Remove all the expectations of others. What do you want? Who do you want to become? And helping people get real clarity on that. Some people, it's there, not far below the surface. Some people, it takes a lot of digging to get there. Once you hit that point and you start to understand who you are, what's your expression, who are you going to bring to the world, that's you. It really empowers people because all of a sudden, you spring out of bed in the morning knowing that that's who you are and that's what you're going to do. So getting people, they'll see like that mountain, that journey that they're about to set out on. The peak is who they want to become. And then the process is, right, so finally, that fog is gone and you can see which mountain you're going to climb up. For years, you've probably been climbing up the mountain to the west when really you wanted to climb the one to the east. And the more you hustle, the quicker you moved up the one you didn't want to go up, further away from where you wanted to be. And again, once people have that moment, for some people, it can take a session. For some people, it can take six. But once you get that, it's incredibly empowering. It's not my job to tell people what to do. It's my job to say, everything you need is inside of you. Let's just give you a shake and get it all out.
Yeah.
So once they've got that clarity, they can see where they're going. So they've got direction. They've got purpose. It's then about, can we build your energy to climb that mountain?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point you made there and hustling up the wrong hill. I think a lot of people are putting a lot of effort into climbing up the wrong hill, and it's exhausting. And they don't actually get the time or the mental space to actually ask themselves that question. And it's something like COVID, where you're forced to stay in your house. The amount of people that have questioned their lives and their purpose right now has been, you know, such a profound, you know, movement where everyone just wants to change careers paths and they want to change their purpose. And when actually inside them the whole time is exactly what you're very good at, like excavating out of these people, you know. I'd love to hear a story around someone that may have had a lot of self-doubt, not a lot of self-belief, so they couldn't actually believe that they could be anything other than what they are. And then through the right, you know, asking enough times, why do you want that? Why do you want that? You know, and then they've sort of come out and they've been empowered. Have you got a story you could share so people could maybe relate that to their own journey?
Yeah, so I've been coaching a gentleman. He's in his late 20s and he came to me and basically said that he wasn't happy doing what he was doing. He just couldn't see anything else. He just felt like he was trapped. And the way he equated it to was, I'm at a crossroads, but there's barriers in front of all the other ones apart from the one that I'm on, the path that I'm on. But I really don't want to carry on like this for the long term. But I can't see the future. So it really began with starting to question him a bit deeper about what did he truly want. And started to realize that as we went through this process, he started to bring up things from the past that he felt were holding back his parents' expectations, how he'd actually felt about moving away to university and then the struggles he'd had there, and how all these things had basically become beliefs that he wasn't confident, he wasn't a people person. And that led him to then, in many ways, step back from being himself and expressing himself and almost go back into his shell and just let life hit him about and the winds blow him around, almost like a snail. Just, and in so many ways, what he'd realized is he'd fallen into this job, not because he'd chosen that path, because it's just how life had happened and how the river had flowed. And he almost said, like, I feel like I'm about to get washed off the end of the waterfall. That was how he described it when we went into some of the visual stuff. So what's really important with this is sometimes questioning. People find it difficult, but ask them to draw a picture and all of a sudden they're able to express that emotion in a different way for people who, you know, have that really strong visual presence. Getting them to draw and sketch the feeling sometimes is really, really powerful and a way to get it out. And for him, it was, we started drawing pictures instead of answering the questions with words. And then he would describe it. And what actually happened is we got into a point where he realized he actually inside wanted to express his message. He wanted to tell his story from his youth. And from there, he's actually gone from being someone who simply wouldn't get up at a team meeting and even speak, when he wouldn't even contribute, to now leading team meetings at work. And that is his own expression of himself. What he's come to realize now as I continue to work with him is that he doesn't want to be in the business that he's in. He wants to set one up himself. And he's now taken the steps to doing that to the point where he's now, while running that business alongside his job, he's about to launch and go and do his work. And his business is the expression of him, his authentic self, the skills that he's got and what he wants to bring. And for so many years, he'd had that there, but he'd repressed it, he'd held it back. And to see, it's, I mean, from my perspective, when I help people through that process and they then take action on what they want to do, there isn't really a better feeling in life.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like, it's so good, you know, and to visually draw it out, like you said, like, who would think to do that, you know, unless you're put into an art class and you're sort of told to do your emotions onto the canvas, you know, that's awesome. Yeah. to think outside the box like that and to stimulate a different part of your mind and to activate that to get you to feel a certain way.
Yeah, and it's amazing because so many people have an idea of art from school where you had five people who were really good and then everyone else who just messed about and coloured some stuff in, painted some stuff and made some craft.
And draw stick figures. That's about as good as my art goes. Yeah. Cool. So really understanding, you know, life's purpose, what your future looks like or what could look like, and then sort of working the way back, is that sort of the way that you would then walk them through the next step?
Yeah. So in so many ways, we kind of get them all the way out to their 10-year vision. And for some people, when they come to you, that's I have no idea what I want to be in 10 years. Some people, they have a more chiseled idea of where they want to be. But for some people, by the end of that first process, that 10-year idea is different than what it was. And quite often I actually say to people, so 10 years, who do you want to be in 2030? It feels like a lifetime away. Yeah. I just want you to think about the person who you were in 2010 and the person you were today and realize that we underestimate what we can do in a decade. Because for most people, every decade of your life, you're massively different as you move through. And what we do is we take people all the way out to that really expansive, you know, ambitious 10-year goal. And then we literally give them a sledgehammer so they can smash that statue into 3,000 pieces, which means that you can do a piece a day, these tiny fragments, and glue those tiny fragments together. You'll have your statue in 10 years. You'll have your ambition. And really, it's my job to give people the permission to smash it into actionable steps.
Yeah.
And then bring it all the way back. So we work on that. We work on that 10 year. Then we actually break it down into a number of 3 years, 2 years, 1 year, monthly, and then all the way down into daily habits, tiny things that you can do every day to take you a bit closer. And people start to feel that progress. And then we start to build in the energy stuff. So we help people start to experiment with the sleep, with the nutrition, with the fitness and their exercise, so they can start making small changes and habits there as well. Because the more energy they have, the more they'll move on that process, the more momentum they'll get, gradually moving towards that person that they want to become. And I think that's something that's quite often neglected in the coaching industry, in general, in that it really helps people to get clarity. And yet, the more energy you can help people get, the more attuned to their own body. Because really, a lot of coaching is helping you get attuned to your mind. But we really need to get attuned to our body as well, because at the end of the day, our body is kind of like a vehicle for our mind. And our journey is one that we're going to be traveling on. So we need to make sure we're putting good fuel in. We need to make sure that our engine is rested and recovered. And we need to make sure that in so many ways, we are there and functional.
So I think that health thing is so important, and creating energy is so powerful. I'd love to talk about that. But before we do, have you experienced where people might undershoot their goal? They're sort of not shooting high enough. It's not ambitious enough. Because obviously my personal thoughts when it came to, like you were saying, think of yourself in 10 years, and I'm thinking this massive goal, and I always push my goals to the limit. So when I was swimming, I was like, I'm going to win a gold medal, you know, like at Olympics. So that's a big ambitious goal. But do you ever get people you work with where it's just like, you know, I just like to have another car, like something too small. So it doesn't actually give you the energy you need to do. Like it's so easy to achieve. You don't need more energy. It's just going to happen anyway. Do you have to work with that?
In some ways, people have different levels of ambition, but really we actually look and say, how out of 10, how much do you feel you can achieve that goal right now? If it's too low or too high, then it's not going to inspire the hope and the desire to chase it. If your goal is really small and feels quite achievable, then I can't help you in many ways, because it's a small achievable goal. You could make very little personal change and you could still get there. So you almost say to people, well, if you could dream a bit bigger.
Yeah.
If you could dream a bit, if you could have a bit more. Or actually, would you like to impact the world more with what you're doing? Because in so many ways, it's about looking at what they've defined to be who they want to become and saying, well, okay, so that's who you want to become. But after you've become that, can you help other people become that? Can you spread that? What do you want to leave behind when you pass? Something bigger? And again, it's really helping people leverage into the fact that most of us, our purpose, it's not something we can read our way to or think our way to. We kind of define our purpose by going out there and trying things, finding what we like. And actually, it comes through action and chiseling your character, failing and getting back up again. And then failing again and getting back up again. And in so many ways, our purpose is through action. It's not through thinking. But most people's purpose is to be happy, to reach the potential or somewhere close, and to help other people. There are things that unanimously come through. And then it becomes about your missions to actually achieve that. And that 10-year goal is about your mission. And sometimes people set themselves a really small mission. And then I'm like, okay, so why don't we 10x that? Think bigger. Mm. I don't want you to chase these low-hanging fruit. Everyone else in the world is chasing this low-hanging fruit. I want you to start to look and think, what's the high-hanging fruit on that tree that you could really aim for? Almost think, shoot for the moon and see how high we can get. Because, again, if you look at things that make a difference to the world, none of them were targeting a small little goal. Everyone was targeting something that other people believe wasn't achievable. And in so many ways, I'm telling people that you've got the potential to do something that changes the world. But if we just aim so small that it doesn't make a change, then if you're happy with that, that's absolutely fine. But there's still more ways that you can bring more to your family, to your friends, you know, to your country, to the team you support. There's so much that you can offer. Why don't let's just look a little bit wider, a little bit bigger?
Why do you think people don't shoot for the moon? Why do you think that they don't push their ambition to the next level?
For a lot of people, it's those beliefs that they've had. So when you're a child, you're told you're good at certain things, not very good at that. when you're a child, you're told, oh, go and get a sensible career. Oh, what's that? You want to be an artist? Oh, artists don't make any money. That's silly. Don't go to art school. Go and do something sensible. And so often we're told that, you know, find a career path, a good career path. Follow this. Go to college. Go to university. Start here. Build up this spirit. And in so many ways, people's desire to aim high, it gets brainwashed out of us. And it's almost like that you're told not to dream anymore. Don't dream. Don't aim high, because you're going to fail. And it's that society tries to keep you down from doing that, generally speaking. And then society also fills you with that fear of failure. So let's be honest, when companies are investing in startups, they know that most of them are not going to make it. And yet they're investing in that idea, that big dream, that passion, that resilience that the person who's coming pitching has, knowing that, you know, probably 30% will ever give something back, but most won't. And again, if you play in any kind of sport, you're never 100% winning all the time. And there's always failure in there. And yet people are scared of failure, so they don't shoot. What they have is this almost like this attitude, again, going back to the archer of ready, 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 aim, ready, ready, aim. Oh, not ready yet. And the way things are perfect. Yeah. Never shoot. And again, that target might be miles and miles away. And maybe you're not going to hit it the first time. Hell, like anything, we need to practice. And those high-hanging fruit, takes a lot of practice to get there. Takes a lot of failures. Takes a lot of falling off that tree if you climb up. And then learn how to climb a little bit better and a little bit better. But again, society tells you, oh, be sensible. Don't put yourself in danger. Don't take too many risks. But your dream is not a risk. You need to move towards your potential. Otherwise, you don't feel like, you know, you're living that full human experience. And you wake up in the morning and you're not energized and you're not connected. You're not aligned to what you want to do. And again, as a society, we should be encouraging people. I mean, education makes little robots who all do the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's not bespoke to your strengths. It should be. We wish it would be. And yet they need to almost make something that's, you know, deliverable across a whole range of, you know, people and places and many things like that. But I honestly believe that the world needs to become a little bit more bespoke, a little bit more personalized, and not say, right, so you need to sit here and do this right now like everyone else, because that's just the way it is. You need to go out there, chisel your own path. No one else's path is your path. And this is the same when it comes to energy as well. We're all different. We've all got different genetic makeup. We've all got a different epigenetic expression, different microbiome. One person's diet plan, not going to work for you. You've got to go out and experiment, find your own. And really, for me, it's come from actually treating things as an experiment. So you put that lab coat on, imagine you're back at science at school. You're going to go and aim for that really high, crazy experiment where you've got to get everything perfectly right.
Yeah.
And you know what? You're going to keep failing. You're going to keep putting too much acid in and it sets on fire. But you know what? Life is just one big experiment. And if you want to experiment to try and find that light bulb, for example, thousand experiments later, done it. And life is going to be like that. If you actually treat life an experiment, one day you'll create something amazing.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of performers, high achievers, and myself included, like they always shoot higher than very high, like really, really high. And even falling short of that high goal. So say if you did 10x the goal that they said, I want to achieve goal one. And you said, why don't you 10x it? And I'm like, all right, I'll 10x it. So then all of the different energies required, all of the extra pieces are required also when you break it into 3,000 pieces. And then you've got more energy because you've got to achieve this thing. And if you fall short at seven, you're still seven times higher than what you were going to be. And
yeah,
that's the way I like to look at it.
And it's massive because, again, you almost have to appreciate that some of these shots to the moon are going to completely miss the moon. But that's amazing data. to do something that might not reach the moon, but it'll sure take off from Earth. And in so many ways, when we kind of have that expansive thinking, and we actually realize that in some ways, the moon is only a guide for what we're trying to do. It's not some distant shore that we're going to one day get to, just like a compass of what we can achieve. And it's billions of miles away. Yet again, set your target billions of miles away, shoot for it, and don't be afraid. It's not going to be perfect. And like almost every company that's been successful, it's not what how you start, it's how you finish. And almost every company that's successful isn't what they're not today, what they started. They started with something quite simple and then gradually churned and evolved to become what they are today, based on data, based on what the market need, based on the dynamics of the industry. And that data is vital. We don't shoot high, we don't get data to help us shoot higher.
Yeah, you don't get the information back to be able to improve on, yeah? So
indeed,
I was also listening just then to how you're talking about everyone's microbiome's different and their diet plans are different. Let's talk about energy now, because I think that's a really valid point. I think it's really important for people to understand, like, if you can create more energy in yourself and your mind and your body, then you're going to be able to achieve more and feel tired less and create more energy. It sort of propagates, doesn't it? Just snowballs.
Yeah, in so many ways, we are one big walking ball of energy. And I think that the first thing we really anchor into in this is the initial define big ambitious goals and your purpose and who you want to become. Well, all of a sudden, that becomes really important when you're anchored into it. And suddenly going to bed a little bit earlier and eating a little bit better, and moving a bit more, it feels worth it because you're aiming for something bigger. And that starts to compound. So instead of lying there on the sofa watching Netflix for another episode, you go and get a bit more rest, because you start to realize in the world of high performance, athletes are sleeping 11 to 12 hours a day. There's a reason why a cheetah can run so fast. It sleeps 18 hours. It's only awake for 6 hours of the day to achieve 70 mile an hour speed, physiological performance at that level. He has to sleep for 2/3 of its life. And when you speak to elite athletes, you realize that they value sleep massively, because it's the fundamental driver of performance and health. And so many people take it for granted. The average Western adult is now sleeping 6.7 hours a night, which is simply not enough to recover effectively. And it affects so many different things: our emotional regulation, our hormonal regulation. Every biological process is affected by sleep. Recovery is vital for high performance. Our fuel is vital for high performance. And if you almost start to see yourself as a vehicle to perform at a higher level, if you want to chase those ambitious goals, then you need to be a race car. You don't want to be a lawnmower. So you need your body optimized. You need to move. You need to move fast. You need to have power. You need a V12. You don't want a V4.
yeah.
And you need to be putting good stuff, your bespoke personal fuel, into there, which means I spent years optimizing my own diet, and it was because I lost the ability to walk and had to build my health back up. Also, it was my own mission to come off medication. But I experimented. I was documenting and journaling how I felt after eating different things and taking them in and out, to the point where I've actually been able to design a diet which energizes me with a little bit of what I can tolerate and very little of what drains me, what fatigues me, and what sets my inflammation off. And through that process, I've suddenly become really aware and have a really high acuity to how things affect my body, which is something that we all have within us. We had it evolutionary, so we'd know our surroundings, our environments, we'd understand and navigate the world. And yet in today's world, there's very little danger. And we spend most of our life on autopilot, walking around thinking about what we're going to have for dinner later. And those just general passing simple thoughts. We make, you know, 1,000 decisions, and so many of them are inconsequential in the moment. However, your your last 10, 20, 30,000 decisions are the reason why you are in the place that you are now. And those decisions are really, really important, because what they do is they compound even negatively or positively. And a lot of what we do around the energy stuff is actually building these incremental improvements into your life, because you don't want to be making decisions on everything. You want to suddenly have a really firm, I'm best if I sleep between 10 and 6. So I'm going to sleep between 10 and 6. I'm not going to be deciding when I go to bed every night. That's one less decision. We get fatigued by making so many choices, and that's not really good for our cognitive performance. If we're constantly having to choose things, then it takes away from our ability to make stronger decisions when it's important, which is why all those tech entrepreneurs and those, you know, Californian crew just wear the same thing every day. Less choices, less process. And it's like, you save your processing power for the real big decisions. And again, you decide, you have a very bright line. I mean, the root of the word decision is to cut off all of our options. That's what the word means. So you decide that, you know, I am someone who sleeps well, eats well, and moves enough, because I need this body to be this race car, and it needs to be fueled. It needs to be fast enough to win the race of life. My race, my personal race, and you aren't kidding. It's personal. You find your personal chronotypes, you know, your sleep schedule, what works for you, the temperature, the environment. You've got to test. Because we're an amazing test bed, amazing subject to be discovered. And that's you. That's your job. For so long we've thought, oh, well, someone else will help us. I'll go to the doctor and they'll fix me. You can fix yourself most of the time. You just got to start working on yourself.
Yeah. You got to listen to yourself and be honest with yourself, hey? And make sure that you're logging and measuring, like we're talking, getting data, collecting data. And what are some other things that we need to make sure? Because I find that so interesting. First of all, how did you stop walking? What's the story behind that?
Yeah, so just to quickly go into that, I was 29. I just started looking at thinking, oh, what am I going to do before I'm 30? I'd just previous year got married, son was born, wife was pregnant with our daughter, and I went from being fully mobile, fully independent, and my immune system started attacking the connective tissue in my joints. So it locked both my knees, my wrist, and my shoulder in place, and left me in hospital. And it caused so much damage to my knees that it displaced the ligaments and the tendons. And I couldn't actually walk, and I had to relearn through walking rehab, intensive physio, and hydrotherapy. And that took 11 months to walk a mile unaided again. So it was a really challenging time. And for me, I went through those initial phases in hospital, the initial shock, like, whoa, what's happened? Then to the frustration, like, I can't show myself, can't feed myself properly. This ain't fair. I've looked after myself. I'm only 29. Then to the grief, like, I'm a man. I'm physical. I'm like, you know, what's going to happen? Am I going to get back on my feet? And you need to let those negative emotions come and go. We've got a whole range of emotions, from the deepest despair to the blazing joy, for a reason. You've got to feel that whole spectrum. If you bottle them up, you're leaving yourself open to psychological problems later down the line. Mm-hmm. So I felt those. And for those first 2 weeks, I wasn't great to be around. And to be honest, I was on so much pain medication that I was on another planet anyway. But once they got the fluid drained off and they got me to a relatively stable point, it actually occurred to me, you get a lot of time to reflect when you can't move. And I was just there in hospital and just thinking like what my future held. And then all of a sudden something floated into my head. And really it changed my perspective completely. And that was the one simple statement. Been on this planet for 29 years, never once been grateful for walking.
Yeah.
It hit me like, boom, wow. Okay, so I'm just going to flip this focus down. Suddenly, I've got all these people coming, helping me shower, helping me do basic things. These people are now here for me. Have I been grateful enough for them over these years? No, not grateful enough. Mm. And then went even wider and thought, I could be an orphan out on the other side of the world where the facilities are poor. I'm been born in the UK. I've always had food. I've always had shelter. Never truly been hungry. I've had free education. I've had the opportunity to set up a business. I've been able to work in a number of different industries. I'm now in a hospital where I'm being cared for, and I'm not even having to pay for it. Why should I lie here, be ungrateful, and choose to suffer longer than I need to? Mm. So on that afternoon, I actually decided I'm going to get back on my feet. I'm going to be proactive in my recovery. I'm going to take ownership over this disease. I'm going to attack it as much as it's attacking me. I've got it. I'm going to have it for the rest of my life. And yet, my own health outcomes are in my control. So suddenly, I took that accountability, came out of hospital, and I went into rehab and did what I needed to do. Every day, waking up, pain, stiff, sore. But I did my exercises. I decided that I wasn't going to do what I felt, because this is where so many people struggle, to be consistent. If you don't feel like doing it, then you don't do it. But you've told yourself you were going to do it. So what you're doing is you're effectively lying to your subconscious. Subconscious doesn't like that. Instead, flip it. Who do you want to become? So I was like, I'm going to be walking again. My daughter's just been born. By the time she's walking, I'm going to be walking as well. That's a really powerful why and a really powerful motive.
Yeah.
But by having that identity, my actions were then, despite the pain, I'm going to do my exercises, my stretches, and all my recovery stuff. How am I going to then feel? I'm going to feel great because I'm actually doing what I'm saying I'm going to become. I'm going to get back on my feet, and I'm doing everything in that direction to do so. So by flipping that, all of a sudden my mindset, I started to see it not as a threat, but as a challenge. And I was suddenly able to move past that suffering. Because in so many ways, suffering is, it's a choice after a certain point where you put in resistance against the pain in your life. And that's actually what puts you into like that kind of suffering spiral. I decided I'd let those negative emotions go, was really grumpy for 2 weeks, but then actually thought, if I'm going to recover, it requires me to move and make progress and be realistic, be resilient. Some days are going to be harder than others, but if you keep making that little bit of progress forward, you'll get back on your feet. You know what? A year later, I was walking, and then I was like, well, that potentiality is there. But I can push myself from not walking to walking. And what else can I do? And more importantly, how can I help people who are not struggling, but just not reaching the potential, to push their potential? Because our potential, we don't know what it is. We'll never know what it is. But if we move closer towards it, we can start to feel what it's like to be closer to it.
Man, such an inspiring story. And thanks for sharing. That's awesome. And for you to realize that, the power that you have. Did you walk before your daughter?
Yeah. a few weeks.
You beat her. What a awesome timeline too, for you to say by this time. Like, I think that's 10xing it, is it? What did the doctors say to you? How long do they reckon it was going to take?
The initial doctors, they were like, they weren't even sure. And it's that in that recovery place, people have got to be very careful with the language. It's very easy for a medical professional to say, oh, well, that doesn't look good. Oh, I'm not sure. You'll be back up on my feet. And because people have a high level of trust in those people in authority and expect that they've seen many similar cases, you'll take those boundaries. If someone says to you, don't think you'll walk again, that subconsciously, you'll stick with that. You'll be like, I don't know. And it'll affect your recovery. Luckily, I had people who were saying, you've come in good shape. So hopefully you'll be able to, you know, be more resilient through it. And if you weren't as in good a shape as you were, you might have struggled with your recovery more than you have. But again, it wasn't linear. It was up and down quite a lot. Like 6 months in, I was back on my feet effectively, but I was in absolute agony because my gait was compromised and it was compacting my vertebrae in the lumbar area and causing me a lot of pain. So I had to go back to physio to learn to walk properly for me, instead of pushing it that bit further. Mm. And I just think in so many ways kind of helped me catalyze the fact that life is really like an ECG, like a heartbeat. It's constantly up and down, never a flat line. Because if it's a flat line, you'd be dead. So it's really getting appreciation for the fact that we can bounce back at the bottom of those trenches. And sometimes we're going to fall into a pretty big trench. But that belief that you can get back to the top of the hill on the next bump, you can always actually bounce back higher than when you started. But you've got to have that kind of mindset that I'm going to push that boundary a little bit. And again, it's about getting people to push those boundaries, push those limits, because we set these false ceilings for ourselves and tell us we can't get past that. Humans are unlimited in the potential. And yes, we have to be realistic, but we don't have to aim for realism because we can push it. And so many things have changed in this world because people didn't take the advice and didn't conform to the boundaries that have been set. And that's part of the human experience. If you set your limits really low, that's as high as you'll ever go. Your identity will always be in line with the limits and the boundaries you put upon yourself.
Totally. And I think what you said there about, and you said it earlier in this talk about the, be careful what the medical professionals sometimes say, if they just slip something out, just passing by and saying, you know, you'll never walk again, or, you know, I don't think you're going to recover from this. Yeah, that's a limiting belief, like your parents saying something to you when you're younger, and from that point on, or a teacher or a mentor or a friend says something to you, and then you start to believe it and you start to propagate that and go, well, that's who I am. And that holds you back. Hey, so with that in mind, what would your, like, I've also got a story from a friend on the weekend who's just been recovered from what they considered a cancer that no one gets over. They said, sorry, you're just going to have to go home, get your affairs in order. No one recovers from this cancer. And my friend went home and said, you know, I'm not going to deal with this. I'm going to take this into my own hands. I'm going to find out what I can do, and I'm going to do all of it, you know? And they're like, go do surgery, go do chemo. And not, I'm not promoting this at all, but this is just a story that was told to me. He came back, did his research and started to fix up his diet, nutrition. He did all of the natural remedies that he could find. Didn't do chemo and did do surgery though, got some cut out, but just got back with the results saying that the cancer is completely gone. And the doctors are just like, what have you been doing? So it's amazing what the body can do, like you're saying.
Oh yeah, there's massive potential there. We're only just starting to realize how interconnected the body and the mind are, and the realization of, you know, psychophysiological action. Well, what you eat affects your mood, your sleep affects your mind in a massive way. But it's just our thoughts and feelings, they're manifested in how we behave and our actions. And I think the biggest thing to kind of look at this and explain it is they did a study at Stanford. It took 43 people who needed knee operations due to chronic knee pain. And they put them into three different groups. One group had a full knee operation. Second group had a minor knee operation and the joint flushed out. The third group had nothing done at all, but they all went under general anesthetic, all went to sleep, and all had a scar. And then they were followed up by pain management and recovery. And all three groups reported the same level of recovery.
Wow. Some even didn't even have anything wrong.
And because again, they saw the scar, they'd been under, they thought they'd had surgery. And again, what you think, your experience, and all this merged into your brain together. The brain's an amazing, you know, piece of technology that we're only just starting to understand at such a basic level. And yet if you think something's happened, it can completely change the frame of the world that you see through. It changes your lens, it changes your worldview, it changes your perspective just off one simple thing. And again, what's really interesting is COVID is like one big experiment that couldn't be mandated by any testing lab, but people suddenly had lots of autonomy taken away, lots of choice, lots of decision. We've had to work remotely and flexibly, and all of a sudden people are starting to see the world through different lens. And it's interesting because not often do you get these really big experiments to see, I think one of the other really interesting ones is when the clocks move forward and back. That shows you just how much impact sleep has. When we lose an hour, heart attacks go up, strokes go up, workplace conflict goes up, and road accidents go up. When we gain an hour, all of those go down significantly. Wow. And it's like, that is the power of an hour's sleep. And that's an experiment that you couldn't take a billion people off to a sleep lab and do that. But it just shows how these things have such an impact. Small changes. And again, that's your life every day. You make small changes, they compound, like money in a savings account. And health's massive with that, because you don't see, if you ate that cream cake and put £50 on, you wouldn't eat it. But because it's compounding, and it quite often is a long process, the sad thing about health is when it goes bad, it goes bad. And our mental health and our physical health, it's our biggest asset, no matter what we do. And really anchoring into that and understanding that if you have a purpose and a mission and you know who you want to be, you start looking after yourself more. You take more responsibility. You take ownership of situations. And that makes you automatically a more powerful person in yourself. You start to feel like you're making progress. That momentum then drives you on. Because it takes a long time to get that wheel spinning. And you've got to put a lot of effort in to get it spinning. But once it's spinning, you're going at a rate of knots beyond that person who's stationary. And suddenly you find yourself flying along in life, making progress every day. And it feels amazing. You feel fulfilled. You feel connected. And you start to feel happy about it. And it's just kind of locking in and realizing our brain is so powerful. In a lot of ways, if I said, you're about to go and do a talk in front of 5,000 people, most people would feel nervous, anxious, sweaty palms, butterflies, a bit jittery. And yet, if I told you you were about to go and do that and you're excited, you would have the same physiological response. Excitement and anxiety at a high level are exactly the same. And yet you can either choose to frame it negative, anxiety, or positive, excitement.
Yeah, I guess I've always been anxious, excited, anxious.
You kind of move between, yeah, you can move between the two really quickly. They're both high arousal states.
Yeah.
Naturally in life, when you get really anxious, people tell you to calm down, which is a low arousal state. On the positive side, you're trying to move diagonally across the spectrum. Even your most enlightened Buddhist monk will struggle to do that, because it's almost like switching off all your arousal. But you can switch from anxiety to excitement. And you can get one person who is, say, for example, me, when I lost the ability to walk, I was seeing similar people in walking rehab, because you're kind of going through it together, the experience of getting back on your feet. And there's such a wide variety. Some people were there with a head down. They'd almost given up before they'd even started doing the rehab.
Yeah.
Other people had framed it as a challenge and decided that they were going to push through it. And you know what the recovery rate is for the people with the heads up versus the people with the heads down. Because it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy if you're telling yourself you can't do it. It's the same with your limiting beliefs. Your limiting beliefs then bleed into your self-talk yourself out of doing what you need to do. That becomes who you are. And in so many ways, I then help people to start break down those beliefs. And sometimes they just need to write them down, find where they originated from, and actually qualify. Is this me? Is this true? And then you start to realize that actually, you've just been propagating a myth all these years. And for some people, it does require a bit more unpicking. Occasionally people have such, you know, such traumatic incidents that they have to go and be signposted to someone who specializes in that. Yet, as a coach, I'm trauma informed. So I know where that boundary is. And I'm able to help a lot of people to start to unpick these beliefs, because they're the main thing that hold people back from really pushing on. And whether it's that self-belief or, you know, your self-awareness, or just your emotional intelligence to dig that deeper in, bit inside yourself. It's just about helping people cultivate that, because again, we've got all the answers inside of us. Every human has that, and yet we're not really taught to pick it out. We're just taught a lot of other things.
Yeah, I didn't know how to pick it out for a long time. It wasn't until I learned how to journal and take ownership of my emotions, you know, and to actually identify the emotions I was feeling. And like, I find it really fascinating how you're saying you move between excitement, anxiety very quick. I'll have an event happen and I can go, because I'm naturally, I don't know if it's natural, I've put a lot of work and energy and into my diet, nutrition, movement, like you're saying as well. And I've got really big, ambitious goals, and that creates a lot of energy within me. And I'll quickly go from, like even this morning, like I woke up and I started feeling really flustered. I went from excited to quickly feeling anxious about, oh, I've got too much on my schedule, you know, like boom. Now I've gone from excited to anxious. And then I've recently learned how to sit down, process my emotions, and then redirect that back into excitement again. So I don't feel anxious for long because I know how to handle it. Whereas before I'd go weeks, you know, I'd drink alcohol. I'd take things to try and get rid of that. Like this is, you know, 5-7 years ago, but like, that's, you know, that's what I had to do to sort of not feel the pain of anxiety, you know, until it just sort of naturally sorted itself out somehow. Or I'd work harder and work my way out of it. But I find that really interesting how you say you quickly move across, because now I find it very quick. I can quickly move that way, but I can also quickly move back because I know how to.
And it does require a bit of practice, but it's also starting, if you want to be a high performer, you need to understand that stress is there. Stress can be utilized, because stress creates an element of pressure, and that pressure gives you performance. And anxiety is a high performance state, because if you calm, you're not going to perform.
Yeah.
you're not going to be able to expose that energy. And again, in so many ways, how we frame stress reacts how we, it mitigates how we react. So if we see stress as a positive thing, it causes us to perform better. We see stress as a negative thing, it drains from our performance.
Yeah.
And it's simple exercise to just see it differently. And that's the beauty of life. Everyone has their own perspective and perception of events. Some people will see COVID as the worst thing in the world and roll up in a ball. Some people will see it as the biggest challenge to humanity and stand up 10 foot tall.
Mm.
And that difference in how we react to things, it begins to define who we are. And I think that for a lot of men, no one teaches you to scale those emotional spectrums. It's always the idea of, you know, man up and ignore the negativity.
Yeah.
Don't utilize it, just block it out. And again, it's difficult because that's a life skill. That's absolutely vital, not only for your mental health and your well-being, but for the future of humans themselves. Because that's a skill that a computer's not going to be able to do, to be able to feel a range of emotions and then utilize those emotions in the way that they're designed to be utilized. So we have anxiety, stress, depression, you know, we have these as a marker. They signify something's happening that we need to react to. Like, if we didn't have these things, then we wouldn't be here, because when we're about to be eaten by the saber-toothed tiger, we'd stand there pondering what we're going to do. We have all these psychological systems, and we're an amazing evolutionary machine. Everything has been honed and designed a certain way, and yet we're so incredibly powerful that we've ended up designing a world which doesn't really honor that. So we have the same process where we almost tell ourselves, oh no, when you're stuck in traffic, and your body thinks, oh no, I'm about to get eaten.
Yeah.
And then it triggers your flight mechanisms and your parasympathetic nervous system. But you're stuck in a car, so you can't fly. You're going to fight. which is why people then end up with the ridiculous behaviours that they do, and road rage, and, you know, irrational drivings, and all those kind of things. You're just like, when you step back and look at it in third person, you're like, what?
Yeah.
What is that guy doing? And yet when you kind of understand a little bit more about how we're wired and how our brain works, you kind of see the modern world isn't necessarily designed for us. What's happened is the world's actually been designed to take advantage of our psychological hooks and our evolutionary biology to make sure that we, you know, we're constantly stimulated and bombarded by things. We're constantly input. Our attention is pulled from place to place. It's not designed for us. It's designed to use us. And a big part of what I do is taking a step back and actually saying, we are the masters of technology. We are the masters of society. You control it. Don't let it control you.
Yeah, you can easily keep your phone away, which definitely, you know, if you need to calm down, you just keep that phone in a different room and don't check it for a while, a couple of hours, and just feel how different you feel. It's amazing what you can feel when you remove that stimulus, which is always like you need the feeling to check in all the time. I actually, back on the point of the how you frame stress, I've got two things on that I feel people could connect to as a listener. One is if you go to the gym and you're creating stress on the muscle, that's why you go to the gym. You want bigger muscles, you want to get stronger, you want to get fitter. That's why you run. So you create stress, and people like that because of the result. And the result is you get faster, stronger, feel better. Like, that's the result of stress. So that's one reframing if people need that. And another one that I talk about a lot in my business academy is when you're scaling a business, a lot of people will get to the point where they're so busy and so all of their time is consumed and they're in this state of stress where they're actually telling the world to not send me any work. Like, I don't want any more work. I'm freaking out. It's too busy. I don't want any more. So this, they're blocking themselves from growing. I'm like, just put on another staff member. And then you're better to have the stress, because you're always going to have some form of stress when you're running a business. If you put on another staff member, now the stress becomes a growth stress. You're looking for more business. You're trying to connect with customers. You know, it's all the things that we want to be doing. It's a different type of stress, but it results in growth. Whereas one stress, or the way that you see it, the framing of it, makes you feel like, I don't want any more work.
Yeah.
Can you relate to that?
That's massive. And I mean, the muscle analogy is really powerful, because going to the gym is the stressor. You actually break your muscle fibers and you break yourself down. Then you go and rest. When you recover, that's when you build back up. The building comes in the recovery, which is why it's so important that when you perform at a high level, you sleep, you actively rest, because that is the building phase. And again, in a similar way with a business, if you're stressed because you're putting on too many hats, you need to step back and become less busy and realize that there's a certain place in your business where you bring value, that you enjoy, where your strengths lie. That's where you want to be stressed, not with everything else. Go and get someone who brings their talents, their specialism, and their gift to do something that you don't bring value. Let them bring the value. That will scale you. That will grow you. You want to be getting stressed and perform at a high level in the one place in your business where you bring the most value. Find where that is. A big part of finding yourself is finding where that is in a business perspective, because that is where you're aligned, where your strengths, what you're passionate about, and where you bring the most value to the world. Find that nexus point in the middle of that Venn diagram. That's you. Do that in your business. Leverage other people's skills to do the other stuff. They will exponentially grow it more than you ever can, because that's where their nexus point is. Go and find those people. They have more than you have to give in that area. Build a team of people around you with those skills. Make sure they've got the similar values and understand your business mission. You'll have a team that's unstoppable rather than a group of people doing a few jobs together.
Yeah, awesome. Love that so much. So we've touched on this a couple of times now. So nutrition and sleep, like recovery, right? Recovery and energy. These are seem to be the big foundation at the bottom of all of this, and it makes sure that we can succeed in those things that we need. And I truly believe that as well. So I'd love to dive into those two arenas. And coming back to what you said earlier in the talk, you were talking about how you worked on your own individual diet that works for you. And I also believe that everyone has their own thing that they have to create with time, and they have to experiment and test and measure like the different foods they eat. But how did you go about it? What's your process for yourself? And how did you go about creating and understanding the food that worked right for you and the things that you put into your body?
Yeah, so this was a few years ago now. And as we get access to more data and more genetic testing, this will become a little bit easier. But for me, it was quite simple. I recorded what I ate. I isolated one single ingredient, took it out, brought it back in. So it required a lot of effort, a lot of consistency. And I was journaling how I felt at the time, 30 minutes later, 2 hours later. Imagine doing that for, you know, over 1,000 ingredients. It took me 3 years. I have a massive stack of journals. To me, it was worth it because I wanted to come off medication. And once you become consistent, it doesn't feel like a lot of effort. Did it affect my life at the time? Yeah. I've just become medication free. So to me, it was well worth it. Now, as we get closer to our genetic testing, being able to identify these things, there will be a point in the future where that process is extrapolated and quicker for people. And yet, for me, it's not necessarily the fact that I now understand, but it was the fact that I started experimenting and started to be able to hear my body. That is something that we're not taught to do. If you go and start to learn to read and understand and listen to what your body's saying, your body tells you most of this already. You eat something, you don't feel good. Well, not good fuel.
Yeah.
You don't sleep enough, you don't feel good, not sleeping right. And it's like our body is the most complex yet simple feedback system you've got. You've got feeling, your intuition, it's from your second brain. It's telling you something's just not right.
Yeah.
Getting that crash after eating that cake, it's telling you it's not right. But again, we are wired, and increasingly so in today's society, to take that initial dopamine hit and be like, woo, it's good. But it's not.
Yeah.
Not in the long term anyway. And getting that understanding that looking beyond the initial satisfaction is what makes a really big difference, not only for us, but for other people. And in business, we start to forget about the short-term goals. Look at the longer-term picture. Can we invest now? And the books will look a bit worse. But yeah, then, in a few years, we'll be on another plane. And that's, again, about looking at that bigger vision. You've got to take that short-term hit. You've got to build that momentum in the short term. It's hard work. Not always pretty. And yet, if we actually look at things in the long term and future cast it back to now, we actually see what we need to do now. And it's not always flashy, and it's not always looking great on the figures. And yet, if you want to build something that makes a difference, you've got to look longer term. You've got to look bigger.
Yeah, totally. And so with the 1,000 ingredients, 3 years, I think that's going to put some people off because, but I know how important it was for you. And I think I probably have done the same thing as well. And I'm the sort of person that's like meticulous. When I say I'm going to do a certain structure in my diet or my exercise or whatever, I freak out if I don't do it absolutely right, you know? But were there specific groups of foods, for instance, non-organic versus organic, dairy, gluten, you know, was there certain things that for you were things that didn't matter, like, if it was a sugar Coca-Cola lolly or a sweet candy lolly, like it had the whole group was didn't react with your body?
Yeah. So what it kind of was is, if you given what food scientists put in food now, if you tried to test yourself for every single ingredient, you'd travel the world and back again trying to do it. So it's more about actually focusing on the things that are commonly in foods, testing them first, and starting to realize how they make you feel and understanding it. So for me, I actually can eat quite, I can eat quite a wide range of foods. There's some anomalies. You start to realize that you ate this particular yogurt and it was fine, but this particular yogurt, no, not at all.
Yeah.
What's the difference between the two? You start to look, and then one's got different types of sugar in, one's got different type of milk in, one's suddenly got a few ingredients where you can't pronounce it, and you're like, okay, well,
yeah,
obviously that's not doing good for me. Yeah. I kind of almost say like the old school food rules, like if you look at what your grandma bought, probably all right. If a fifth grader can't read it, it's probably not good.
Yeah.
And what you kind of notice is if you look at how supermarkets are laid out, all the sensible stuff is around the edges, and all the more manufactured and processed stuff is in the middle.
Yeah.
And on the ends of the aisles, waiting for you to pick it up. But in so many ways, I found out that I really struggle with peppers and onions, and yet they come in so many different things. You never really think about it.
Mm.
And it's just starting to see what really, really caused me problems, and knowing that I simply don't want to eat that. It's like putting petrol in a diesel car, and it's just not working for me.
Yeah.
And again, some of it's common sense. Like, you know, if you're going to eat the biscuits, it's probably not going to be good for you, because it's just not.
Yeah.
And most of us know that, but you need some attachment, some purpose, some reason to make that decision about how you're going to eat. And it needs to try and be outside of a nutritional belief system, because when you decide to follow the latest diet, well, that's not designed for you, firstly and foremostly. But secondly, you start to restrict things based on beliefs rather than what you need. And that can feel like it's working, but you need a bigger reason. You need to be actually like, I need to find for me what's going to work for me. That's part of life's journey. Like, we wouldn't accept a lot of things just the way that they are. We want it to be more like us. But what if they sold you a car where the seat was tiny? Because, you know, that's just how it is. I'm not gonna have that. Well, are you gonna put these foods into your body? This meal plan that's designed for someone else's tiny bottom.
Yeah.
For you? Yeah. No, you're not gonna have it, are you? But again, nutrition on the internet is terrible, generally speaking.
Mm.
From a science perspective, it's really young, only over 100 years old, in comparison to, say, biology and surgery. They're thousands of years old. And there's scientific studies that can prove almost anything at the minute.
Yeah.
Because it's such a young science. And that means that people cherry pick and then proclaim that their way is the best way. And really, there is no best way. Well, there is a best way. Best way for you. You're going to find it yourself. By experimenting with the food, you can't read your way to clarity. And this is something I so often say. People search for meaning. They search for purpose. They search for clarity. Find it by going, doing it yourself.
Yeah. Awesome. And if you spend that time actually focusing on your own, listening to your own body, like you did, just create a baseline that you feel good on, and then start adding things in. And if it feel bad, take it out. Yeah, that's just the way to do it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a way to do most things in life.
Yeah, awesome. So talk to me more about sleep. So you've said sleep so many times in this. So do you feel people aren't getting enough sleep? Why is sleep so important?
Well, for me, sleep is fundamental, probably even more so than nutrition, simply because it affects everything, every single process in our bodies. So again, that recovery is where we grow, but also it's where our bodies clean everything out, clean out our brains, clean out our digestion, clean out our blood vessels. And therefore it's actually important, so important to performance and overall health.
Mm.
So when we're kind of looking at sleep from like a jump up in a helicopter and look at it, you realize that it affects everything else. So it affects our ghrelin and leptin hormones, which manage how full you feel, your blood sugar, and your cravings for food. You get them in a place where they're not being regulated well, and you'll make poor food decisions. Your body cognitively processes slower when you sleep, when you've not slept, your body's not had the chance to recover, your brain's not had the chance to recover. Suddenly, that high performance state, you're not there. You can barely focus. You can't keep your attention on a task. You can't work deeply. You struggle to even have a simple conversation when you're tired. And I think that one of the best ways to look at it is how it affects your behavior and your actions. So a little child who's underslept, they start misbehaving. They're all over the place. And people are like, oh, he's just tired. He's not had his nap. Funnily enough, adults are exactly the same. Mm. So you don't sleep enough and suddenly your emotional regulation, you see more negative and you swing wildly positive to negative. And that causes you to take a word wrong, get triggered, conflict at work, mistakes, accidents. You're just not cognitively there and present and performing at a level that you should be. And actually puts you in danger to the point where if you fall asleep at the wheel and crash, you're much more dangerous than a drunk driver because there's absolutely no correction or action. Whereas a drunk driver tends to make a mistake and then try to correct. If you're asleep, no correction at all. So it's actually more chance of damage and fatality. And just in so many ways, looking at how you sleep is vital. We used to sleep 10 hours a day only 200 years ago. Then the light bulb was invented. Then the TV was invented. We were down to 8 hours. Have our bodies changed at all in 200 years? No, not at all. Fast forward to today, smartphone has taken an hour off people's sleep. Just because we've now got this flashy light device beaming photons through our eyes at all hours of the day. And it simply messes up our biological processes, our melatonin secretion, and we just start to basically not understand our biological rhythms. We run on circadian rhythms and ultradian rhythms. They rule, regulate our cells. 98% of our DNA runs off that rhythm, and we don't honor it in the modern world, and that's a real problem. You want to perform at a high level, got to honor your body's rhythms. And they, again, are slightly different for different people. It's really important for you to connect to your rhythm and start to understand where that is by experimenting with your sleep, starting to understand exactly where you lie on the spectrum. Are you an early bird? Do you prefer to sleep later? Do you prefer somewhere in between? And start to look at what your chronotype is, because again, we were evolutionarily designed to have someone who would stay up late and watch the camp in the days when at night we were prey. And there'd be people who woke up really early, so we only had roughly a 4-hour gap where we were vulnerable to being eaten. And that's passed down through people's DNA. So some people have widely different schedules in terms of their own sleep biorhythms, and yet schools and work always seem to start at the same time. Is that truly taking advantage of people's best times to perform? No, it's absolutely miles off the mark. And again, it's an experiment. So you need to experiment with temperature of your room, the darkness. You need to set it up as an environment where really you're sleeping and having sex, and that's about it, because that's what your bedroom's for, and you spend a third of your life there. And it's just kind of looking, you know, your bedding. Is your bed supportive of your back? Is your pillow supportive of your head and neck? Is it an environment where you can rest and recover? Because that's where the growth is. That's why it's vital. You clean, you grow. Nothing else can replicate sleep. And the stages do different things. You need to get your sleep cycles as congruent as you can. And that does mean curfews on caffeine, alcohol, exercise. Because ultimately, when you go to sleep, your body's core temperature drops a few degrees and off it goes, off you go into slumber. And yet, you can do a lot of things that stop that process. If you're anxious, that's what stops most people going to sleep. If you don't have purpose, then all of a sudden, entertainment becomes more important than your mission. And you'll just stay up to all hours and neglect it. And because it's something that we do, like breathing, we don't ever really look at it in detail. We just take it for granted. We just take an hour off. And yet you won't get an hour's productivity the next day. You'll lose time. Again, athletes know this best. They sleep a lot. They take naps because you need to be refreshed. You need to be there, present, fully recovered to perform at high level?
Yeah, I think something that's probably attributed to my anxiety this morning that I was talking about earlier in this talk was I haven't been sleeping as well in the last week. People are saying there's weird things going on the earth and not many people are sleeping at the moment, but yeah. I'm definitely noticing it in the way I'm feeling. But man, so some things that people can do in their bedroom. So you've already touched on some of those things. Make it as dark as possible. So
yep.
Something that I do that people might want to try is a sleep mask. Other than that, there's things, being an electrician, I know about light, you know, seeping through. There's the lights on your electronics. You shouldn't have electronics in your room, like a TV or phone chargers. There's EMFs. Obviously, when you're charging, an EMF is when the electromagnetic field is circulating through the charging pulse. So that is happening. So many people go like, there's no EMFs. That's just part of physics, and that's just what happens when you charge something. So charging it right next to your bed, on your bedside table, right next to your head, is going to interrupt. So all those people out there with their phones charging next to the bed and the light popping up every time they get a message.
Most people don't realize that our skin has light sensors in.
Yeah, so that's the vitamin D, as well. When you wake up and the sun touches your skin and then it activates the creates the energy, starts to create your waking up.
So our skin is photosensitive, so it's got light sensors in. Some people are more powerful than others, and yet that is one of the things that precludes some people from napping during the day. But it's getting that understanding that, you know, you can utilize blackout curtains. You don't want those electronics in your room, those stimulation. And again, it's about trying to get the temperature right. It's about ensuring that your bedding, it's for you. It works for you. People complain about spending thousands of dollars on a mattress, but just equate that to how many minutes you lie on it and how regenerative it will be to get one that works for you. Versus the negative compounding of having a cheap one that doesn't work and will have to be replaced very much quicker than the more expensive one. And then it's just around looking what might make you anxious. Maybe have a PM routine where you emit the blue light so your melatonin production can go up. Find ways to do that. Find a PM routine that relaxes you, because again, different for all of us. Some people want to journal the brain out so it's not hanging there. Some people want to read and have slower inputs going in. It's really important that we almost have a digital sunset and put our digital devices away, because again, no matter what we do, we're not really designed for, you know, evening time use for a lot of people. And again, if you're getting emails pinging and stimulus at that time of night, it just creates an underlying level of environmental stress. You don't want your bedroom to be cluttered, because again, that's stressful. Some people, they want it dead silent. Other people, they want a little bit of background noise, and that makes them feel a little bit more comfortable and helps them settle off. And it's about finding what's right for you. But most people just chuck some stuff in a bedroom and let it be. And again, it's about experimenting. It's about making that space a sanctuary for you to recover. If you want to get up with vitality the next day, you'll spend a little bit of time on that. People spend more time designing the living room, choosing the car, than they do setting up the bedroom, where they spend a third of their life. It's a vitally important environment. And I obviously do a lot of work around workplace environments, and we spend a third of our life there as well. So it's absolutely vital that we actually look to optimize these and make it work for us. That is where the magic happens.
Yeah, heard of also, so it's like 33 years, if you live to 100, it's 33 years of your life you're sleeping. That's what people don't want to go and get a bed, you know, and they'll put more money into a car, which they spend a fraction of the time in. So and it will only last a couple of years. So I've also heard of people getting cooling mats for their beds as well. So have you heard about the different types of cooling mats you can get to keep that temperature regulated? You know anything about that?
Yeah, so temperature regulation is vital, because as soon as we're fighting to keep ourselves cool or keep ourselves warmer, it knocks us out of our cycles quite often at the top in REM sleep, and then we have to go through stage one to get back in. Also, really, because our body cools down as we fall into sleep and our core body temperature drops, it's important that we don't go to bed dressed like an Arctic hunter, because otherwise we'll spend most of our night sweating trying to regulate our temperature. But cooling mats are useful, more useful for some people than others, very useful for people with insomnia, because the reason why they struggle to go to sleep is because they can't get the temperature down. And that's usually what's causing a lot of the issues.
Yeah, okay.
So if you imagine, weighted blankets work really well for some people. And there's lots of little like technical gadgets that we're starting to look at, like, you know, stimulating the vagus nerve, and that helps some people sleep. Even looking at some strains of cannabidiols that can help us in induced sleep as well. And there's a lot of research going into it. There's about 10 papers a month on sleep. And it's interesting because it's not as varied as nutrition. There's general consensus coming across about what works, what doesn't, what can affect some people. And again, it's about going out there, trying some of this technology. Like sleep tracking data at the moment, it's great, but a lot of people get the data and then don't really do anything with it. And we're kind of getting there towards having a bit more data literacy around sleep cycles. But I think for the general member of the population, they still just go to bed and hope for the best.
Yeah. I didn't realize I actually liked silence. I personally like silence until we had kids. And we had a baby, and we created a really, for anyone that's becoming a new parent or in parenting and struggling to sleep, my wife and I decided she would go to bed early and she would wear earplugs from like 7 through till 2 in the morning. So she would get 7 hours sleep. And I'd stay up and feed the baby late. So I'd stay up to like 11, between 11 and 12 when they needed that that feed. And then because they're fed every 3 hours at the start. And then I'd go to bed at 11 or 12 and put my earplugs in to sleep till 7. So like we both got 7 hours and I put earplugs in. It was like first time I ever put earplugs in to go to sleep and a mask. And it was like, I was just blacked out to the world and it was really good. So I still wear earplugs now.
Well, and it's again, you experimented and you find what worked for you. It's always interesting when, you do things that remove your sensory inputs. And again, like in some ways, in a strange way, I'm probably one of the few sleep specialists out there who will tell certain people that they become trained to sleep with a television on in the bedroom. And if you remove it, it actually causes them more problems than it solves.
Mm.
And it's about actually looking at people's bespoke circumstances, because sometimes people can actually train themselves to do really suboptimal things, to the point where if you take it away, it makes it worse.
Yeah. I think I agree with that. There's lots of people in all different areas where they get used to doing something a certain way and you take it away and it just destroys their performance. So, interesting. Just like Michael Phelps and his KFC and being able to perform as much as he does. And like, everyone's like, what? It's that much chicken. So, awesome. So thanks for sharing all those tips around nutrition and sleep. One thing I want to touch on before we finish up was what you said right at the start around developing leadership in a team. So could we just touch on that before we finish up today?
Yeah, definitely. Let's go into it.
Cool. So I'm really interested about leadership. I've developed teams and I help other people to develop their team. So I'd love to hear how you go about integrating all of the things we just talked about into leadership as well and managing teams' performance.
Yeah, so a big part of it comes down to leadership really having a purpose. So a business is a vehicle for change. Hopefully that change would be something positive in the world. And those values need to be something that's participated in through all levels of the organization. So values on a wall that are written but not lived don't have any value. Yeah. It's about understanding that leadership must be congruent. They must actually show that they also espouse the values of the business. That then engages employees and inspires the level of hope. And for a lot of leaders, naturally, leadership seems to become a structured process. And it is in principle. However, having that emotional intelligence to lead with self-awareness and understanding that the people that you're leading, they don't necessarily want to follow you. They will follow you as the messenger before they follow your message. And they will do as you do before they do what you say. But understanding that everyone has the potential within them to do great things, giving them some level of autonomy so they feel valued and appreciated, but giving feedback in a way that it doesn't feel like punishment. So in a strange way, if to boil it down, leadership comes down to two things. Firstly, leading yourself first, because people will also be inspired to be a leader themselves if you are leading yourself. And secondly, a big part of leadership actually comes down to the charisma of being present when you're speaking to people, and a simple basic relative of being human, love. If you actually love what you do, but show a level of love for other people and understanding, and simply communicate that through your organization, helping people to actually engage, give them motive, give them a reason. Don't tell them what to do, but ask them to do something and see what amazing things they come up with.
Mm.
Because in from a leadership perspective, you're there as a you're there with a level of guidance. You're not there to demand. If anything, you're there to serve and help people become leaders themselves. And that's what great leaders do. And in so many ways, when you kind of go back to that element of who you want to become, well, you don't want to be someone who had thousands and millions of followers. You want to be someone who made a difference. You can use your leadership to ignite other people to come on your journey, and then to set off on their own journeys, to lead their own projects, to actually innovate and create things on a whole other level. And that's how, as a leader, you actually expand your impact, the difference that you make. And you've got to help grow other people, treat them as people, not as resources. And again, everyone has that potential. You can help them anchor into this productivity and performance. You want the place that you lead to be a vehicle for change, but you also want it to be the place that attracts the talent, is somewhere that the industry considers a great place to be. Because then other people who are inspired and empowered come to join you on your journey. And again, the real thing with leadership is to get people aligned with those values and aligned to their values. Because then they're all in with their work. They're engaged, they're motivated, and they will have morale as a team. Because so often in today's society, a company is like a group. Lots of people, but all moving in the wrong direction. The actual definition of a team is a group of people with one big direction to move into, and all moving in that same direction, utilizing their own authentic cells, their own skills, their own specialisms, their own strengths, to all move forward, marching in that direction, up that highway together. Leader at the front, showing the way, living by the values, watching other people follow, empowering them to become more responsible, helping them to understand that conflict will only pull us back. And yet, if I'm open and honest, you can be open and honest. Standing there, being credible, charismatic, and being present. And that really, for me, is leadership in 5 minutes.
Man, that's so good. That encompasses everything, man. That is really good. So when it comes to leadership, it's just like you as well. Like when you said at the start, you working with people, helping them understand what's important for them and asking the right questions. It's like, just like you said, it's like empowering the person to be their full selves, you know, and when you do that as a leader, they feel indebted to you through reciprocation and want to, that, you know, and you, all you're doing is helping them be at their best. And I truly believe that. And I live that with my teams and just definitely promote that. But the way you put it there was awesome. So thanks for that 5 minutes leadership lesson for everyone. It's like, hopefully it gets some good resonation with that. Awesome.
Super.
Thank you so much for your time. Man, this has been such an awesome chat. I really appreciate everything that you've said, all your expertise, all of your stories, everything that you said. It's been really valuable and really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, Greg. Thanks for having us on.
No worries. Thanks so much.